In 1988 and 1989, F.H. Gates challenged the congregation here to help raise the money for a building in Belo Horizonte, Brazil. It was estimated at the beginning that the building would cost $350,000. There were four other congregations sponsoring missionaries in the work there. And so our elders decided to challenge those congregations to raise or give $50,000 each, and that we would give $50,000 and raise $100,000 and purchase that building. Some of the other congregations did not follow through completely. But during a period of about a year, the church here at Henderson gave over $56,000 personally in addition to our regular contribution. And our regular contribution increased during that time. And we raised well over $100,000 from other congregations during those few months and met the challenge and purchased the building that's helping the work in Belo Horizonte, Brazil to go in what I believe to be one of the best ways of anywhere in the world. During the time that we were giving the $56,000 plus here out of our own pockets, we designated one Sunday to give at least $20,000. That was about 12 years ago. The church here on that given Sunday gave over $20,000 to go toward that building. I think that is an example of what the church here will do and continues to do when there is a challenge presented. We've done it again and again. And I personally appreciate so much the way the folks in this church respond to a challenge when they understand what is involved and understand the needs. Next Sunday, being our next fifth Sunday, has been designated as Mission Sunday, and particularly some mission work in Brazil. Ron Butterfield will discuss the details of that a bit more at the end of the service this morning. But we have a challenge before us again, and I have no doubt that we will meet that challenge. The mission committee suggested that I might want to, at least in part, address next Sunday in the lesson this morning. And as I thought about that and made plans for today, I decided that really we don't need to talk about money. Money will take care of itself if we can understand some other factors involved in Christianity and understand the challenge that is always before us. Last Sunday morning in the auditorium class, Brother Butterfield was teaching and was talking about leadership and made the statement that really what is needed in the work of the church more than anything else is people accepting their own personal responsibilities. That statement has just echoed again and again and again in my mind throughout this week. It's not hard to place the blame on somebody else for whatever's going on. It doesn't seem difficult for us to even know what others ought to be doing. Perhaps one of the greatest needs that we have is being able to accept our own personal responsibilities and really let the buck stop here when it comes to living the Christian life. So I've decided this morning to talk about some concepts that I think are helpful not only as we prepare for a special day next Sunday, but as we prepare in a sense for a special day tomorrow and the next day. Every day in the life of a Christian ought to be a special day. And our preparation for each day is necessary. And the way we understand the challenges and accept the personal responsibilities in life will determine in large measure whether or not tomorrow is successful, whether or not life in general is successful. I hope you noticed one statement that Craig read a moment ago, one that is read many, many times there in Revelation 3:20. The words of Jesus, he said, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man will hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and sup with him and he with me." Folks, God is not going to force us to do anything against our will in this life. Oh, death is appointed, I know that. Judgment is coming. God will bring all those about. But I'm talking about your own personal emotions and feelings and attitudes, my own personal attitudes in our hearts. God is not going to force us to do anything. He didn't make us like that. He made us with the ability to make decisions, with the ability to learn, the ability to develop feelings and emotions, the ability to develop a determination and a will. And he's interested in doing everything he can to encourage us, but he will not force himself into any man's heart. And you and I cannot force ourselves into each other's hearts. Oh, there are some things that we can force each other to do. The policeman, for example, can force a person to go to jail. Parents can force small children to do things, but we can't force them to like it. We cannot force them to have the right attitude in the heart. God will not force, and I cannot force anything into your heart. You've heard it said before, I've said it in this pulpit. The door to the heart only has one knob, and it's on the inside. And what is in that heart that dwells in your body not only is going to determine what you do next week, but it's going to determine what you do each day. I think the statement was right that perhaps our greatest need is learning to accept personal responsibility. Now let's apply that in some different areas this morning. It is not possible for me to give you the ability to love. I thought about wrapping up a package this morning and writing love on it. I didn't get around to that, but suppose I had a package here this morning and had love written on the outside and I handed you that package. Would that force love into your heart? I don't think so. Now, certainly the commandment is there for us to love. Luke 10:27. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's no doubt about the commandment. It's there. God commands us to love, but he won't force us to love. Love is an emotion that can be taught. Older women are instructed in Titus 2:4 to teach the younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. We can teach about love. We can teach how to love. We can teach how important love is. But you just can't force anybody to have the ability to love. It cannot be forced from the outside. We can encourage and provoke love. Hebrews 10:24. Let us provoke one another unto love and good works. We are to provoke, stir up. That word is used in a good sense there. We're to stir up the idea of love and good works, service. But you can't make anybody love. You've got beloved verse of John 3:16 is love. God so loved the world. But you look at the rest of it and you see that there's something that man must produce in order to take advantage of that love. It is impossible for either one of us to give anybody else the ability to love. If you want to live with hatred and malice in your heart, you can't. The other side of it is nobody can force you to hate. And I'm thankful for that. I don't care what happens in life. I don't care how people treat you and me. Nobody can make us have hatred in our hearts, just as nobody can make us have love in our hearts. It's up to you as to whether or not you love as you should. It's impossible to hand anybody a ready-made faith. We live at a time when we want everything to come to us prepared. Let's go to the fast food restaurant. Let's get our clothing already made. Even sometimes people will order a house kit where every log is numbered to put the house up. We want everything just come ready-made. And sometimes we'll even ask, in case of a house, you build it and hand me the key. I want it ready where I can move in so that I don't have to really do anything about it. And I'm afraid sometimes that's the way it is with our faith. Romans 10:10 says, with the heart man believeth unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. And seven verses later, faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. One day this past week, the little message at the end of Tell was, if you're weak on faith, try driving into the Bible for a fill-up. And that may be what's needed. Now, I'm persuaded that many of the problems that we have on a day-to-day basis, where we get into some situations of compromise, is because we don't have our own personal faith, know what we believe, why we believe it, and really believe it. Now, we can give the examples of faith. Romans 15:4, things written aforetime are written for our learning. Hebrews 11, the Hall of Fame chapter of faith, again and again, by faith, certain man, certain woman did this. I can give you those examples from the pulpit. They can be given in a class. You can read them yourselves. But it won't give you the personal faith that you need. We can even set the example before one another. We can see a strong faith within our lives. During the past few years, as I've been associated with some of our members who have been facing death and have been there as they drew their last breath, I have been strengthened to see the strong faith that that person had and that the family had. That's encouraging to me. That's helpful to me. To see the faith that some of you have as you're facing some of the most difficult times in life is encouraging to me, but it won't give me the faith that I need. It won't do it. And folks, if we're expecting somehow or other to have an inherited faith, and that may be one of our problems, that as younger folks, we're doing what we're doing simply because that's what dad and mother did, and that's the way it's been in the family for years, instead of knowing what the Bible teaches and believing that and putting it into our hearts and having our own personal faith, we're never going to be successful in life until we do that. There are going to be times, young folks, probably have already been times, that you're going to have to make some decisions for yourself. Dad's not going to be there. Mama's not going to be there. Your Bible class teacher's not going to be there. And you're going to have to make some decisions, and whether or not you stand up for Christ or you roll over and compromise the truth is going to depend largely upon your own personal faith, and nobody can give it to you. We can teach, we can encourage, we can set the example, but it's up to you. It is impossible to put joy into your heart. There's no way that I can go get a gallon of joy and pour it into your heart or you into mine. It just doesn't work that way. A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. Proverbs 15:13. Two verses later, a merry heart is a continual feast. Two chapters later, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. I think even the physicians understand that having the right attitude toward happiness is important, even from a physical standpoint. Paul, in writing to the church at Philippi, in chapter 1, verse 4, said, I have you in my hearts with joy. And at verses 25 and 26, he said, you are rejoicing about me. He showed how joy goes in both directions. But Paul wasn't giving them that joy, and they were not giving Paul that joy. If you want to be miserable, God will let you. As a Christian, you ought to be like the Ethiopian eunuch in Acts 8 and the Philippian jailer in Acts 16. The eunuch went on his way rejoicing after he became a Christian, and the jailer came back to his house and rejoiced after he became a Christian, and that seems to be the way it ought to be with all of us, even being able to rejoice in persecution as some of the early Christians did. Maybe shedding some tears and having some heartaches along with it, but overall having an attitude of joy. But nobody can make you happy. Nobody can just unscrew something on the top of your head and pour a gallon of joy into your heart and make you filled with joy. Can't be done. It's up to you. Nobody can give you the desire to do right. It's impossible. I have a sermon that I preach sometimes on the most important thing in Christianity, and the end result of that sermon is the desire to do right, and I believe that very, very strongly. If somehow or other you and I can encourage one another to have the right desire, our daily lives out there tomorrow, what we do in our worship services, and how we support the Lord's work, and what we do in service one to another through the week will fit in to the overall pattern. Again, I say, if we have the desire to do what's right. You and I won't always do what's right. We'll make some mistakes. But if we have the desire to do what's right, we really want to do what's right, I believe we'll do what's right most of the time, and when we find out we haven't, we'll be ready to make it right and then try to do what's right the next time. But nobody can make you do what's right. Brethren, my heart's desire in prayer for Israel is that they might be saved, Romans 10 and verse 1. As he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly of necessity, for God loveth the cheerful giver. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. The conscience bears witness, either excusing or accusing. Romans 2, verse 15. The love of Christ constraineth us. 2 Corinthians 5, 14. Looking at the example of Jesus Christ ought to constrain us to want to do what is right. All of these things work together to try to develop within us the desire to do right. But if you decide that you want to do what's wrong, that you don't care about God, you don't care about the feelings of others, and you're just going to do what you want to do, whether or not it is right, God will let you do that. Oh, there may come a time when he'll call a stop to it, because he is in control. But God will let a person live a life of crime, a life of sin, a life that is wrong. He doesn't want him to, but he'll let him. Because God will not force you to have the desire to do what's right. And I can't do it. No way. It's impossible. It's up to you. It is impossible for a person to be saved without the gospel. Time to time today, I'm reading where people say, well, maybe God has another way, and love of God, somehow or other, he's going to do this or this or that. From my personal standpoint, listen to this closely. From my personal standpoint, I'd be glad if God had any way for man to be saved. I've never seen the person I wanted to be lost. But from my understanding of this book, there is no way of salvation but through Christ. John 14, 6, I am the way, the truth, the life. No man cometh to the Father but by me. Now that's important in a local sense, in that we need to realize that those who are not in Jesus Christ have no promise of salvation. And it's important in a worldwide sense, particularly as we think about Brazil, to realize that the one who has not heard the gospel has no possibility of salvation unless he is able to hear the gospel. Romans 10, 13, whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved. But how shall they call on him in whom they've not believed? And how shall they believe in him whom they've not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach except they be sent? Right there's what we're talking about. We're talking about coming to a realization that it is impossible for a person to be saved without the gospel. And that's why it is so important for us to work to send the gospel throughout the world. In 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 8, Paul said, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. He said, I'm preaching the gospel to you because others are helping me. He realized that was the only way to do it. And just two or three chapters later, in chapters 8 and 9, where he's talking about more here the support of benevolent work than he is mission work, but look at the principles. In verse 2, he mentions liberality. In verse 5, they gave themselves. In verse 7, they abounded in this grace also. In verse 8, the sincerity of your love is proved by what you is proven by what you do. In verse 12, a willing mind. In verse 14, an equality. He said, if you'll just get down to where you realize what is involved in doing the Lord's work, he said, the Lord's work will take care of itself. And he commended them for what they had done. He even said liberally, and he said out of their poverty they had given liberally because they first gave themselves to the Lord and realized that it is impossible for a person to be saved without the gospel. Therefore, it's up to us. And then summing this up, it is impossible to force you to be a Christian. And I will admit to you, if I thought it were possible for me to come and force some of you to obey the gospel and be baptized, I'd do it today. And some of you that are smaller, I have no doubt that I could forcefully take you and I could forcefully bury you in a pool of water. That wouldn't make you a Christian. It is impossible to force you to become a Christian. Oh, I was baptized just to get my wife off my back. You may have been put underwater. You weren't baptized. If that's the only reason you had. There's nothing wrong about wanting to please your wife. There's nothing wrong about wanting to do something that will be helpful to others. That's a part of Christianity. But when it comes right down to the bottom line, it is impossible for you to become a Christian unless you want to. Obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered you, Romans 6:17, which means you cannot obey unless it is from the heart. You may go through the form, but you can't obey unless it's from the heart. Now we can encourage, and it's interesting, in 2 Corinthians 5, that verse 11 says use fear, and verse 14 says use love. Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men, the love of Christ constraineth us. It's a combination of all of these, and I believe we need to use any motive that we can to stir people up to want to be Christians. Nothing wrong with using those motives. But the obedience has to be from the heart. Again, I stand at the door and knock, Jesus said. If you'll open the door and come in, open the door, I'll come in and sup with you, and you can sup with me. Over there in Acts 2, after Peter had told them what to do to be saved, look at verse 40. Many other words did he testify and exhort, saying, save yourselves from this untoward generation. It's up to you. Nobody else can do it for you. When it comes to love, faith, joy, desire, taking the gospel, being a Christian, it's up to you. What will you do about it? It's together we stand and sing.